Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be here. The title of my sermon this afternoon is Who's to Blame? And I want to take a little trip back in time to set the mood for what we're going to talk about, all the way back to August of 2005. For some of you, that was before time began, right? 2005, something happened named Hurricane Katrina. It was a huge storm, and many parts of the Gulf Coast and the area that got the most media attention was New Orleans, to where many parts of the familiar streets that you saw in photographs were flooded. People were walking up to almost their knees in water. And when this happened, so many people were trying to figure out, how did it happen? What caused this? I thought we were prepared for something that might happen like this. And people started throwing out all different kinds of reasons why the levees broke in New Orleans. And some even threw out, I will say, wild ideas as though that dynamite had been purposely placed at the base of some of these levees so that other areas of the city wouldn't flood, that they would be protected, but this certain area would let water in. That's just a conspiracy theory. I'm not here to promote that, but that was just what was named. Others blamed a neglectful mayor that didn't take the proper precautions. Some say that there were actual flaws in the design of the levees before they were even built. And some even said that there were flaws in the actual construction of the levees. And some just said, we blame the president, President Bush. So there were all sorts of reasons that people were throwing out there to try to figure out, how in the world did something like this happen? We had prepared, right? And the root of the question, you know, where did the blame lie? Where did it actually lie? I can remember that time. I can remember how everyone was trying to figure out, and it just seemed like everyone was pointing a finger in the opposite direction. And all they could say, how horrible it was and how unfortunate it was for the people that lost their homes, and some of them lost their lives. No one wanted to take the blame for the disaster, though. But could you blame them? I mean, who would really want to say, yep, that was my fault, that all these people, you just open yourself up to be sued, right? But it is, I don't blame them, because it's very difficult to take blame for something so big, so destructive, and something so public. But I think we often take the same approach in our lives on a smaller scale. Something happens and we want to start pointing the finger in every direction that we can find. We look at disappointments, we look at failures in our life, and we try to look at something else to blame, right? We get on the scale and we might say, the scale must be broken, right? We look every which way to find where the blame is. And the first point I want to lie on, I have 3 points this afternoon, talk about where we try to blame. The first one is we try to blame the circumstances. Back in the day, not too many years ago, Albion used to have a festival called Pork Day. Some of you might have been to Pork Day. And if you're outside of Albion, it might seem like a ridiculous festival to have, celebrating pork. We had a Little Miss Pork Queen, which was an honor if you were titled that. All sorts of vendors and all, you know, it was just like a huge summer gathering. You would go. If you were little, you got to see your classmates that you hadn't seen in what seemed like, you know, 4 months, and actually it was just like 3 weeks, you know. I mean, it was a huge event that everyone looked forward to. And we haven't had it in a long time. Pork Day, I think the last time we had it was like maybe 6 years ago. And talk about the good old days, back when we used to have this festival and all the good memories. But then I asked myself, well, what is preventing us from doing that? Well, what's preventing us from doing that is actually someone organizing it. That's about it. We ran out of people in our town that wanted to take on that burden of organizing it, getting vendors, getting any type of entertainment, making sure it was all coordinated. We just ran out of people that wanted to take that on. And that's why we don't have it anymore. It comes down to maybe one person for a reason that we don't have something. So as much as I could sit around and say, man, we just, you know, the good old days, they're gone. No, the good old days could be here. It's just circumstances are off. In Numbers chapter 20, I want to take a look at Moses and how he dealt with something that he did that was wrong. Here is the account of Moses before the rock. Starting verse 2, and there was no water for the congregation. They assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people quarreled with Moses and said, would that we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why have you brought the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness, that we should die here, both we and our cattle? And why have you made us come out of Egypt and bring us to this evil place? It has no place for grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, and there's no water to drink. Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the entrance of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the staff and assemble the congregation. You and Aaron, your brother, and tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. So you shall bring water out of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle. And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock. And he said to them, here now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hands and struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. The situation here. Moses is dealing with people that are constantly complaining. They are rejecting all of his work that he has done. They are rejecting the gifts that the Lord has given them as far as freedom. And they're basically complaining, why can't we go back to it? Moses is constantly hearing this. And he does do something that God did not command him to do. He did it the wrong way. He got kind of ticked at him. He says, here now, you rebels, shall we bring water from you from this rock? I am so tired of hearing you talk against the Lord. Fine, we'll give you water. And immediately, God lets him know that was not right. And here is a punishment. Later on, as Moses talks about with other people, saying that I cannot go into Canaan with the Israelites. I cannot go into that with God's people because God is angry with me for what I did at the rock. Moses never blamed the circumstances for that punishment. He never said, I mess up one time and you don't let me in. He never said it was unreasonable, or that it was overblown. He never said, God, you know what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with the whiners 24/7, and no matter what I do, they're going to still want something else. He did call them rebels. He did get angry with them, but he never said that God was unjust for delivering that punishment. Moses took the blame. You know, I've talked to others that have talked about churches in southern Illinois. And they say, well, it's not a good area to have a bigger church. And they blame this area for churches not being as big as they are further down south. And I think we have an attitude when we look at other churches in the area, and we might throw blame at their feet. Well, they have baseball fields, or they have peppy music, or they have all these events. I'm not saying they don't have problems. They do. But I think we're very quick to throw the blame at the feet of the world. It's your fault. It's your fault. And we blame the consequences or the circumstances of the world. The world is always going to be enticing. It always has been. It's very easy to blame the world for our problems, because then we have a reason other than us as why the things are the way that they are. Did Moses blame the people for his misconduct? No. He knew he was wrong. He admitted it, and he accepted the fate. And then, even, he continued on with God's people, right? He still had a journey to go on with these people from this moment on. He knew he wasn't going to go where they were going, but yet he continued to serve God. I think Moses is a great example on how to deal with blame. Moses is like, I did something I should not have, and I know there's a punishment, but I will continue on. So we might blame the circumstances of why things are the way they are around us. Or the second point is, we might just want to blame everyone else. When I'm at work, my desk usually is, it's extremely organized. I have a huge stack here, a huge stack here, a huge stack here, and it's things I need to read, things I need to work on, things I'm working on now. Random stacks everywhere. It's organized up here, you know what I'm saying? But I love getting pieces of paper off my desk. Even if it's a single sheet, if I'm done with it, I'm like, oh, I get to shred that, and I'll walk it over to the shredder. I just love getting it out of my space. Like, I'm done with it. I also like putting the status of a project I'm working on in someone else's hands. Like, I need those numbers from Jeff. Jeff, I need those numbers. Okay, you work on that, get back to me. Okay, it's not in my hands anymore. I'm waiting on him. So I can kind of shift the responsibility and the weight of something getting done onto someone else. It feels so good, right? And if someone comes and asks me, hey, what's the status of this project? Well, I'm waiting on Jeff. It's a relief, because the blame isn't placed on me. And I think we do this in other ways as well. I have a second cousin over in Indiana who has been playing. He's in high school. He just graduated high school, and he's been playing soccer like almost year round since he was 6 years old. And he's pretty good. And has some schools looking at him, and it was just expected this kid's going to go to major university and play soccer. And my grandmother is a big supporter of him and just kind of puts him up on a pedestal, and I don't know why. But she talked about how, you know, their team was supposed to win state, and they didn't. They actually got booted out pretty early on, earlier on than they thought they would. And I remember my grandmother talking about the final game, and she's just like, you know, they were expected to win the whole thing, and, you know, they just played, and it didn't go their way. You know, the other team was really tough, and we just couldn't make it happen. And I'm like, well, that happens sometimes, right? One team is better than the other sometimes. And she goes, but you know, those referees really were not good. They blew so many calls, and really, at their age, they have no business being out there and making calls. And I'm like, oh, I get it now. It's not the player's fault. It's the referee's fault, right? In no way. He's too good, right? He's too good that could not have possibly happened, that he could have been outplayed. It must have been someone else's fault. It's beyond the realm of possibility. We have to find blame somewhere else because we can't accept this type of failure. The need to blame can blind us. Genesis chapter 3, I'm going to go through some prime examples of blame, and we can see how ridiculous they are. Genesis chapter 3, we know where we're going with this, right? Verse 11, you know, the confrontation after Adam and Eve's eyes were opened. And God said, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree of which I commanded you not to eat? The man said, the woman who you gave to me to be with me, she gave me the fruit of the tree and I ate. And the Lord God said to the woman, what is this that you have done? The woman said, the serpent deceived me and I ate. I mean, they're telling the truth, right? You can kind of see in the language of Adam saying, well, the woman that you gave to me, you remember her? The woman that you gave to me, gave this to me and ate it? And of course, we read this story and we're like, nice try. But this is us a lot of times, isn't it? It's not my fault. It's their fault that I'm this way. It's not my fault that they're that way. In Exodus chapter 32, see if you can guess where we're going with this one. These are some of my favorite examples. I probably use this in a sermon 30 times. Exodus chapter 32, verse 22. And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord burn hot. You know the people, that they are set on evil. For they said to me, make us gods who shall go before us. And for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. You know the people, they're set on evil. And I can't be blamed for being talked into melting down gold and forming it into a structure of a cow and saying, here is the God. I can't be blamed for that. These people are evil. Of course, we read that now and we think, you are ridiculous, Aaron. You were conned into that. What happens when we blame everyone else? We're saying that there's nothing that we could have done because of the other people getting in the way, right? We didn't lose the game. The referees lost it for us. There's nothing we could have done to win that game. They ruined it for us. James chapter 1, starting in verse 12. When we talk about failure, we have to remember where failure can lie. Verse 12 of James chapter 1. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Each one is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. You know, we might do this blame game when we have acted badly and we don't want to admit it. Those of you who have been married or are married, you ever done that? Like, you kind of know you're wrong, but you don't really want to admit it, right? Because you don't want to give them a win. And then we start trying to find other things to blame. You said this, or you said that, they said that. We might do this when someone leaves the church. Well, they just love the world too much. Bye. We might do this when numbers get low. Well, no one wants to hear the truth these days. Well, maybe some accountability is in order. This brings me on to my third point. We might look to blame the circumstances. We might look to blame others. But really, we need to look at how the blame is ours. When I was writing this sermon, I decided to ask my children and my wife why they're such a disappointment to me. I'm joking. No. I asked them on certain things that I know they're not, they have like certain goals and they don't achieve them. So before I seem too mean, let me go into what I'm talking about here. The question I asked Lincoln, I said, Lincoln, why is your handwriting so poor? And I was waiting for like, well, I'm just rushing through, you know, and he was very honest with me. He says, because I don't take the time. Oh, okay, right? There's ownership there. You know, I'll ask Monica. I'm like, Monica, why didn't you get up this morning and go on a run? You said you wanted to. Well, because the bed was calling me, right? And I said, well, what's a goal of yours that you wanted? She's like, I'd like to be able to do a single pull-up. I said, okay, what is preventing you from doing that? And she said, I haven't put the time into it. Okay, you know, honesty, accountability. I asked my youngest daughter, Lillian. I said, Lillian, why is your room dirty? She said, I don't know. Okay. And so I go, no. I think you know. I mean, how did it get dirty? She goes, I've been playing in it. I said, okay, well, why don't you put the toys back when you're done playing with them? She goes, Dad, sometimes I just leave them out. And that was her explanation. Like, it just happens that sometimes you just got to deal with that. But we got to a sense of the ownership was hers, right? It wasn't her sister who she shares a room with. It wasn't her fault. She's like, yeah, I leave them out. I do that. And I was pleasantly surprised when I asked them, you know, talked to them about why they haven't reached some goals that we have set, you know, for the kids and stuff like that. They're like, well, I haven't done it yet. And it wasn't someone else's fault. You know, most of the time we can trace the blame back to the person that we look at in the mirror. When we fail, when we sin, remember James chapter 1, right? You're enticed by your own desires. When you think about it, if you find two children fighting and you come in right as the other one is hitting the other and you say, why did you hit your sister? And if the child says, well, she hit me first, do you say, oh, I understand, hit away? Now you're like, I don't care, right? You are going to be held accountable. Just because she hits you doesn't mean you get to hit her back, right? We hold people accountable. We say you are not going to start blaming other circumstances, the temperature in the room, the condition of the room. If someone looked at you weird, that does not give you the right to misbehave. Galatians chapter 6. Starting in verse 6. Let the one who has taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. And let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. We are to be careful where we place the blame. And that includes foolishly thinking that we are better. In Romans chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "Therefore you have no excuse, O man, every one of you who judges, for in passing judgment on another person, you condemn yourself, because you, the judge, practice the same things." So, I think we have a, sometimes we look at the church and the growth of the church, and we look at so many external things to blame. Maybe we blame the internet, just the way people are today, our communities, our area of the country, condition of politics, the world. But who is to blame for the church not growing? Who is to blame for the church not being appealing to others the right way, of course? Who's to blame for the church not being on fire for the Lord? Can you answer that question? And be careful not to fall into the trap of the first two points I made this afternoon. We have got to accept some blame. But there is good news. If we can accept the blame, we have the opportunity to become better than we are. To say, yes, I was wrong, and I'm going to change. If we don't accept the blame, we're going to be thinking, if only, for the rest of our lives. And if we don't accept blame, then we can never really fully repent. If we don't accept the blame, then we're going to refuse to let God change our hearts. And if we don't accept the blame, then God knows that we have lying hearts. We have to quit blaming everyone else, and we have to start looking at where we can change. If you want something to change, do it. I will end on a happier note, because this lesson is all about accountability. And I gave this sermon a while ago in Albion as well, to where, going back to my example about Pork Day not happening in Albion, I can sit around and reminisce and talk about the good old days and how they used to be and miss it, and then maybe even complain about it. That could happen again. It could be restored, and it could be just the way it used to be. We have so much to blame God for, in a positive way, all the good things in our life. And I think it's time we start celebrating all those good things, and we start telling people about everything that we can trace back to God blessing us with. They are countless. And we need to start taking that message to people and saying, we want to celebrate that together. And then by doing that, by giving God our whole heart, our obedience follows along with that, because we wouldn't want to do anything else. Nothing the world could offer us, we would want to do, because we are so desperate to love God with our full heart. I leave this lesson with you this afternoon, and I want everyone to think about where they are with God right now, where you are with God. Are you close with him? Do you feel distant from him? You might be thinking of others that you've been praying for that are distant from God. And we need to start taking ownership of what we can do to reach out to them, show them love, and hopefully have them grab a hold of the gospel and love it too. We offer up an opportunity for everyone to come forward if there's something we want to pray about, that we can pray about it in numbers, and with numbers comes strength from that as well. So if there's anything that you would like to bring to us as a church, we would want to invite you and come forward as we stand and as we sing.
complete, why you see.